rise. All persons have a business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Draw an eye and give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Davis. We're here today in the matter of Chisholm versus Nicholson, docket number 050769. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Barbara Cook for Mr. Chisholm.
Gail Sherman for the secretary.
Gail, Barbara. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Ms. Cook, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes.
Okay, the clerk will reserve 10 minutes. You may proceed.
Thank you. I'm Barbara Cook, representing Mr. Chisholm. My client is here with me in court. And the issue, as the court knows, is Mr. Chisholm's entitlement to a fee. He represented the veteran at the administrative proceedings, and as a result of that representation, the veteran received past due benefits of approximately $28,000. The entire amount was used to reduce an overpayment of the veterans. So the veteran benefited from Mr. Chisholm's representation, and the VA benefited. But Mr. Chisholm, the person who did the work, and the person who was responsible for the creation of the past due benefits, received nothing. The Secretary relies on Snyder 3 to say that this result is proper, and that one line in that case, the VA will calculate attorney's fees based on the amount that is to be paid to the veteran after all statutorily mandated deductions have been made, dictates a ruling against Mr. Chisholm. That language makes sense within the context of the facts of the Snyder case, but the underlying rationale and analysis of the Snyder case supports Mr. Chisholm. Specifically, the analysis in Snyder 3 looked at the notice given to the veteran to determine what was the veteran paid. This is at page 446 of Snyder 3. And the court noted that there are three columns. There's an award, there's an amount withheld, and then there's a monthly entitlement. And for the incarcerated veteran in Snyder 3, that monthly entitlement by law was limited to a maximum of at the 10% rating. And that's the amount on which the fee was based. In this case, looking at pages 260 and 288 of this record, the monthly entitlement to this veteran was the 30% rating. That was his payment. And that's the amount on which Mr. Chisholm's fee should be based. We know that was his payment because of the definition of payment, again, in Snyder 3. A payment, according to Snyder 3, essentially copying Black's definition at page 450, is the performance of an obligation. There was a performance of an obligation here. The payment of the debt is the performance of the obligation. The veteran's debt was reduced as a result of the creation of the past due benefits account. He had full use of that retroactive award in order to reduce his debt.
Ms. Cook, on page 451 of Snyder 3, what do you make of the language most instructive here? Is the regulation's recognition that an award will not necessarily result in a cash payment to claimant? Thus, where there is no payment to claimant, despite a successful award on the basis of a claim, VA would not pay the attorney fee.
I think that that language dictates a result in favor of Mr. Chisholm, because that language specifically doesn't define what a payment is. There's other language in Snyder 3 that does tell us what a payment is. So the question is there a payment or is there not? If there is, according to the language that you just quoted, then there should be a fee paid to the attorney. And there is a payment, was a payment here, first because there was this performance of the obligation, second because, again, according to Snyder 3, a payment is the opposite is contrasted with an abstract entitlement. There was no abstract entitlement here. The veteran was actually found to be eligible.
How would you suggest that the VA recover any overpayment to the veteran?
They recovered the overpayment here by virtue of, they recovered a portion of it by virtue of the 80% of the past due benefits that belong to the veteran. They can't recover the 20%. And given that interest in the VA's wanting to recover overpayments, it only makes sense to allow Mr. Chisholm and other attorneys to recover a fee for representation when their work has generated the past due benefits. If the court rules against Mr. Chisholm, he will be that this $28,000 that the VA, or the $5,000 rather, that the VA used to reduce the veteran's overpayment will be the last time that the VA gets an overpayment from the result of an attorney's representation. No future attorneys will ever take cases where there's an overpayment. That's in no one's interest. That's not in the veteran's interest, and it's not in the VA's interest.
Was your client aware of the indebtedness owed to the VA prior to entering into the representation agreement?
It was, the indebtedness existed before he undertook representation.
Is there another way to protect the attorney representing the veteran?
I'm not aware of
through
any other
contract drafting. A provision that would allow him to go against the veteran directly?
Well, he can't. If the veteran's only source of income is VA benefits or Social Security benefits, he, even if he gets a judgment against the veteran, he's not permitted to.
But that language could be added to a contract, couldn't it?
No, because statutorily you can't. You can't, if you bring a lawsuit against a veteran, whether you're the attorney who's trying to collect a fee or whether you are a creditor who, you know, the more anybody, you can't collect benefit, you can't collect payment from VA benefits. That's part of the, that's just a prohibition on collection that's in the statute.
Can you collect it from any other sources of income or assets that the veteran has?
I don't know, Judge. I mean, it would depend, you know, I think that what is being speculated about, though, is an immense burden because it requires a separate litigation. The veteran.
Right, but before we go into what we're speculating, we're just trying to understand. I recall cases that have come up and said that ultimately the veteran might be responsible. But I'm just trying to understand. If you don't collect this from VA, is the veteran responsible under the contract that you have to pay, or is he not?
Actually, I don't know how to answer that, Judge, because what I can say, though, is that under Snyder 2, the VA is responsible.
That, no, like, I understand that. I understand the issue that we have is whether or not VA can withhold the funds and whether or not cash and all the other things that exist. But just underlying all that, if, in fact, VA can do what it did, is the veteran ultimately responsible to you under your contract for the amount?
Yes.
He is. And you could go collect it if he had the assets?
If he had the assets,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I have a question. What is your view of the validity of the term cash payment in the VA regulation?
I think that to the extent that it adds a requirement that's not in the statute, in other words, to the extent that it adds a requirement that there actually has to be cash in hand, you know, coin in the pocket, so to speak, I think it's invalid.
Why is it specifically you believe that that language is invalid? How does it conflict with the statute?
Because it simply adds a requirement. The statute simply requires that there be past due benefits created. If on top of that, those past due benefits must result in cash in hand as opposed to the performance of an obligation, then it conflicts. I think that the court in Snyder 3 resolved a lot of that by defining cash payment as the performance of an obligation, because a performance of an obligation does not have to be cash in hand. And the fact is that the veteran...
You keep using the term cash in hand. do you believe that the regulation cash payment, the term cash payment, can coexist with the statute and your theory of recovery?
Yes.
Can you explain that, please?
Because under Snyder 3, cash payment is defined as the performance of an obligation. So if that's the definition of cash payment in the regulation, then it's a limitation. It expands the concept beyond just, you know, coins in the pocket, so to speak, in the sense of recognizing that any form of a payment is a source of an attorney's fee.
The secretary doesn't actually hand out dollars to people, does it? Do they?
Not that I know of, Judge.
We're not dealing with cash. We're dealing with
money. I agree.
And in this case, your position is that the money was effectively given to your client and then immediately taken back to pay a debt that was due to VA.
Correct, because there was a debt created, and there was a past due benefits amount created, and the past due benefits statute and regulation, the regulation is at 1.911 and 1.912A, talk about collection by offset from payments. In other words, there's a payment, and then there's an offset. That the veteran himself can't pay the debt unless
he has a payment. Do you understand the secretary's position here?
In all candor, I don't, Judge.
You're perplexed by it?
I am. As I read the briefs last night, there was consistent assertion that the veteran did not receive a cash payment, but did not ever describe why it was not a cash payment. And as I've indicated, a payment is the performance of an obligation, which the veteran had here. A payment is the opposite of an abstract entitlement, and it's a predecessor to an offset. For all those reasons, this veteran did get a payment just as surely as he had, as if the VA had put money in his pocket. They
so
did
your position, counsel, is that the veteran actually received a monetary payment?
Yes, he did, because otherwise he could not have paid off the debt. He owed the VA money.
Right.
But the VA also owed him money. The VA didn't stop owing him money because of the creation of the past, because of the existence of the debt. It's just that because of his debt, they were allowed to offset it. It's two steps. They owed him, he owed them, he owed them more than they owed him, and so it was offset.
And doesn't the regulation then contemplate that the only way the veteran is able to pay counsel is if he received a net? In this case, he didn't receive a net.
I don't see that the regulation requires a net. The regulation requires a payment, which is what he received. And if you look, to me, it just becomes circular at some point to say, well, he didn't get it. You know, the regulation says he has to get a payment. The question is, what is a payment? If I owe a friend money, and with the friend's consent, instead of paying the friend back, I pay one of her bills, or I pay someone else that she owes money to. I've paid that debt. She's received a payment from me.
She's gotten a benefit.
She's gotten the benefit.
Yeah. What if you don't pay all of it? What if you pay part of it?
She's still gotten benefit from it.
And you still owe her something.
I do still owe her something. But that doesn't answer the question as to what I paid her. Was that a payment? What I paid on her behalf, was that a payment? It was a payment. She could not come back to me later and say, you know, if I borrow $50 and pay $20 or $30 on that to someone else she owes, she can't come back to me later and say, where's that full $50 you owe me?
Have you looked outside our law to other law dealing with insurance payments to third parties or anything to see?
I'm sorry, Judge, I didn't hear.
Have you looked outside the court's case law or the VA regulations to see how courts have looked at other payments that are made to third parties, the example you just gave, or insurance proceeds that are paid directly to a car dealer who repairs a car, or any of those? Are they deemed or considered to be a payment?
I've looked at a few cases, Judge, and it Typically, what they, what I have read is that they say that, I take that back. I have not looked at cases about whether those are considered payments. So, okay. No, I don't know.
Now, in this case, we're not talking about a third party. All the examples you gave were third-party payments, right? We're talking about two parties here, right? In other words, the, when you're in the focus of your analysis, it's the veteran's debt to the VA we're talking about. In both instances, this is it's the VA that's involved. Do you take any significance from the fact that the overpayment as a result of pension payments is a distinct transaction from the representation and the payment that resulted from Mr. Chisholm's representation in this case? These are two distinct transactions. Does that make any difference in your analysis?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it, Judge. I'm not sure, but I just don't know. I mean, because I think that the critical thing is what was the payment, and was the thing that the veteran ultimately got, was that a payment? So I think that the source of the debt, I don't think is relevant. Mr. Chisholm is entitled to a fee because there was a payment to the veteran from which the fee could be deducted, because a payment is a performance of an obligation. The veteran was permitted to pay off his debt, and that a payment of a debt is a performance of an obligation. And 20% of that payment was Mr. Chisholm's under Snyder II. Ruling against Mr. Chisholm would ensure that no other attorney takes overpayment represents veterans on their compensation claims where there is or may be an overpayment. And the policy is thus self-defeating. It ignores the legal definition of payment and conflicts with Snyder II. So on that basis, I ask that the court reverse the board and find that Mr. Chisholm is entitled to a fee as a matter of law.
Do you want to reserve the balance of this time, too?
Yes, thank you.
All right.